Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. With another day between games 2 and 3, I wanted to fall back on a topic that I've done before for Locked On Warriors, but in a new way, which is continuing the replacement series, but with Sean Livingston. So I wanted to go through a few different angles on him as a potential free agent, some of the guys that could fit in, and various kind of topics related to that. And where I wanted to start is something that makes Livingston different from a lot of other players in his space. And nominally, the Warriors consider him, everybody talks about Livingston, as Golden State's backup point guard. However, Livingston does not play the minutes when Stephen Curry sits. So in that element of it, he is not actually the Warriors' backup point guard. Ian Clark is closer to it. And there's a good reason for that. Livingston doesn't fit particularly well with that unit. They don't need the shot creation as much. His lack of shooting is a little bit of an issue with those units. So he actually plays a lot more as Klay Thompson's replacement than as Steph Curry's. However, he does fulfill, theoretically, this year, fortunately, the other part of being a backup point guard, which is being ready to be the starter should the starter be unavailable. And in most circumstances, in most schemes, those things are one and the same, but they don't have to be. And Livingston is a great example of why those can, in certain circumstances, be decoupled. And that is also why theoretically replacing him is so hard, because whether it's a single guy who fulfills both of those responsibilities or splitting it up because both Clark and Livingston could be gone, it is a challenge because the Warriors do not have much in the way of resources or, as a practical matter, in roster spots to make that work. And that functionally means that they have to hit on one or two guys because they can't really cycle through unless they're going to get really expensive. Because remember, this year, it wasn't as costly to sign Jose Calderon and then cut him and all that sort of stuff. But next year, with the luxury tax, all of those little moves matter a lot more. So the other kind of fundamental that I wanted to start with was Livingston as a kind of as a player, as a free agent. And he's 31 right now. He will turn 32 before the start of next season. And so, you know, that's older, but not old. Point guards, especially bigger guys, and Livingston's 6'7". Those guys often age reasonably well. And Livingston, at this point in his career, post his serious knee injuries, he is not somebody who is particularly reliant on his athleticism. So that part of his game will age reasonably well. However, what has become a fundamental constraint of sorts in terms of his value, and this could be a very good thing for the Warriors, is that it is pretty clear that he is not a starter at this point in his career, at least not a heavy minute starter. And in most circumstances, that will really depress his value for two different reasons. One is starting point guards get paid more money than backup point guards. That makes sense. You know, that's the way it works at almost every single position. What makes point guard a little bit different than other spots is that backup point guards can be incredibly valuable, particularly if that backup point guard can play with the starter. And Livingston, because he has shooting guard size at 6'7", he plays a lot with Steph Curry. He could do that in other systems, but as a practical matter, unlike last year, there are not a lot of teams that need a backup point guard and have just a ton of money to throw at a backup point guard, even a kind of a hybrid guy. So for example, the Charlotte Hornets need a backup point guard in the worst way. They need somebody to replace Jeremy Lin, who part of what made Lin special for them in the 2015-16 season was that he could back up Kemba Walker, play all the minutes he sat, and then play with him. And those are incredibly valuable players. Giving Livingston, he's gotten around 20 minutes per game for the Warriors, 19, then 19 and a half, then 18 this year. And, you know, he's actually played a fair amount of games. He hasn't really sat too much partially because they've given him a reasonable workload. So there are teams that could really use him, but as a functional matter, very few of those teams, if any, have the kind of cap space that they would need to. So for example, Charlotte Charlotte would love to have him. All they're going to be able to offer, in all likelihood, is the non-taxpayer middle-level exception. That's about $8.5 million. So it only takes one team, but the pool of teams is smaller than it would be otherwise. And so the other part of the free agency thing to talk about is the prospect that Chris Haynes was the first one reporting on. I've talked about it on Locked On Warriors ad nauseum and written for it on The Athletic about the idea of what happens with Kevin Durant. And why Durant matters is because if he takes less money, about $3 million, then the Warriors can retain him using non-bird rights, then they can stay over the cap, and that would allow them to pay most notably Livingston and Andre Iguodala, though theoretically Ian Clark and James Michael McAdoo as well, using cap exceptions as opposed to using cap space. And that would, or the room exception, theoretically. And so that gives the Warriors the ability to sign Livingston for more, whether they want to, whether they can come to a number is a different question, but it gives them that capability. And so that does open up a greater window for it. And an idea that the Warriors could use with him, I've pushed this with Iguodala in the past, is an idea where they pay him less money per season, but the last year is either guaranteed at an amount that is treated kind of like a golden parachute, or that it guarantees more if he plays more minutes, if he meets certain performance thresholds is probably an easier way to put it. And that could make sense for both sides, because basically the idea that if he's going to age out, turns 32 before the start of next season, maybe you wouldn't want to have a 35, 36 year old playing his role. So maybe you sign him for technically 3 years, but the expectation is that that third year is more of a bonus for him than anything else. And yes, that would be very expensive for the Warriors considering where this team is going, but you could argue that it's worth it for them. So those are the kind of the big points with Livingston and his free agency and everything else. I don't know who that team who's going to offer him a ton of money is, especially considering the market is pretty loaded at the top. Curry, Chris Paul, Kyle Lowry, Drew Holiday, George Hill, Jeff Teague. Like, all those guys are miles ahead of him in terms of the list, and that is not every team. But the other thing to watch is Livingston might not be the best fit for all these franchises that are going to be drafting point guards. This is a very point guard heavy group that is coming in, and he can be a stopgap, but when you have a player that you don't want to give serious minutes to, that would be unconventional, and it would also be a team committing two kinds of resources to the same guy. So you could think about the Orlando Magic if you really want to, but the Magic, A, already have Elfrid Payton, and B, already are paying a bunch of money to DJ Augustine. They shouldn't have done that. That was a big mistake, but it'll be harder for those types of teams. The next tier down, I'm sure some people would have Livingston in the mix, but I would say at this point, Patty Mills, Darren Collison, and Rajon Rondo have all established themselves more. The interesting question with Rondo in particular is he does look and feel more like a starting point guard, and that kind of looks to be what he wants. So it is possible that certain teams with smaller roles would rather have Livingston. They actually have similar deficiencies in certain ways, but the idea that Livingston has already embraced being a small cog in a big machine is an advantage that he has for certain teams. Other teams don't care, you know, Sacramento or even Chicago, if they're just going to pick up his partial guarantee. For those types of teams, you could make an argument that Rondo is better, and then for other teams that are maybe a little bit better or that are looking, already have a point guard on their roster that they think is the answer, then Livingston makes more sense. The most interesting comparison for him in terms of value is somebody like Derrick Rose or Deron Williams, both guys that were much better than Livingston in their primes, but as those guys are kind of aging out of where they were, they're kind of getting into where Livingston has made a living the last couple of years. I would have Rose significantly over Livingston because of his ability to get maybe back to part of the level that he was at before. Deron is a complicated circumstance. I think that's more about fit. Also, Deron Williams might take less money to stay with Cleveland. We don't know all that kind of stuff. We don't know what he wants. So Livingston might kind of stand alone on the market, and that's a challenging thing to figure out. If I had to ballpark it, I would say something like he could agree to the Warriors for something like what is technically a 3-year, $25 million deal, but really it's $220 and then like a $5 million golden parachute. I think something like that would be worthwhile for him just to give that stability, especially if Ian Clark ends up getting a really crazy offer, and then you're trying to kind of go bargain basement for his replacement if you want to keep the same general overview. And I talked about that on the replacements podcast for Ian Clark of what the Warriors should be looking for there. So if you're going in that direction, then Livingston provides more value. Then maybe you're thinking about him being the guy who is the backup point guard if Curry gets hurt, or if the Warriors start to go closer to the route of giving Curry more planned rest during the season, Livingston and that other guy, whether, you know, whoever that ends up being, if it's Ian Clark or if it's somebody else, that could work reasonably well. At the same time, if the Warriors wanted to move on from Livingston, the practical situation is that they would be looking for two different people in all likelihood to replace Clark and then to replace Livingston. And the backup point guard market is intriguing, but not particularly enticing. You have more of those kind of like stable veteran types. So Ty Lawson, Ray Felton, Sergio Rodriguez. And no matter what, if you're getting somebody in that realm, you're asking them to take a major pay cut, because whether Durant takes less to get bird rights on any of those guys, really what the Warriors are looking at is some sort of mid-level exception and minimum salaries. And they should not use all of that mid-level exception, whether it's a bigger one or a smaller one, on a point guard. It's not their biggest need. Center, unless Pacioli and West come back and don't use the mid-level exception, are going to be bigger priorities. They want to get somebody else. You know, they're not going to use that spot to replace Livingston. So then you're looking for who's going to take a discount for the minimum. And I think somebody in that group of three, maybe Ramon Sessions, who has a team option that Charlotte might decline, those types of guys might do it on a one-year basis. And somebody else that the Warriors could turn back to, not exactly the perfect fit, but Jose Calderon, who they had that positive experience with last year or earlier this year, that's worth considering. And then the other two guys, long time ago, former Warriors CJ Watson, who has a partial guarantee on his contract for next year, which I fully expect the Magic to cut him loose. They don't really need that money on their books. And I don't think anybody's going to claim Watson. So he could be a good fit of a guy who would take a low value just to raise it, because he was for the most part, he was the third point guard in Orlando, didn't exactly raise his profile. And well, he's 33. Maybe he's looking for that and a little bit of coming full circle considering his career started in Oakland. The other guy, I think I might have mentioned him in passing before, that might fit actually kind of both categories a little bit, though I think he's more of a backup point guard, so he'd be more of like an Ian Clark version, would be Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks has bounced around the league a lot, but I think he can be capable as both a backup point guard who can slide into a larger role and as the Clark replacement guy who's more of a catch and shoot player offensively. So that might work too. That would be an interesting option should he express a willingness to come to the Warriors and everything like that. And he might be the closest that they could come to a kind of best of both of those worlds circumstance. And, you know, it's always hard with restricted free agents, because if basically whatever the Warriors could offer would probably get matched. So I don't think they really have a shot at somebody like Ron Baker. Maybe if Michael Carter-Williams declined, or if the Bulls declined his qualifying offer because they're just worried that that's too much money for him and the cap hold and everything like that. Maybe at that point, if he wants a one-year make good and they can get him at a reasonable price, you would consider something like that. I don't think Michael Carter-Williams is particularly good, but if you could get him on a discount and he wants the shine of being on the Warriors, then that's an option. And then the other guy that I actually think would be the most compelling if he were to hit the market would be somebody the Warriors know well, and that's Bryonte Weber. Weber does not fill the role of playing with Steph Curry, but I think that he could be a good steward of the second unit, and I think that he could be just kind of like a utility point guard, garbage time, and then fill in a larger role when necessary. So again, not a Livingston replacement, and I think one of the things that this exercise taught me is that there really aren't many Livingston replacements, and there also are not many guys who fit particularly well as a kind of an off guard that really plays the Thompson replacement role, except for somebody that the Warriors already have in their books. And I floated this in the replacements episode on Ian Clark, which is Patrick McCaw might actually be the replacement for Sean Livingston if he gets a really good offer, they can't come to terms, because McCaw can fill that role next to Curry. He can defend both guard positions. He can hit open shots. You could argue that in many ways, if he gets a little bit stronger and a little bit more versatile defensively, that he can kind of be a plus version of where Livingston is right now, because he has the ability to make good decisions with the ball in his hands. And while Livingston is way better at that, it's not super important to have that when you have Steph Curry on the floor. A lot of times when they're closing the first and third quarters, Kevin Durant is out there as well. So the shot creation advantage that Livingston has and the strength advantage aren't as important as, especially if McCaw gets a better three-point shot. So that's another option too. And again, then that would lend itself to the idea of going more for a traditional backup one, maybe somebody like Sergio Rodriguez, Ray Felton, basically whoever takes the Warriors' money for that spot. And I think that's the most inspired decision. But also another thing I want to mention is that if they went that route, you would almost definitely want to bring in two point guards with the hope that one of them works. Because whether that's through a training camp deal, maybe something like JaVale McGee, where they have a training camp deal with upside, where if they, you know, if they make it work, then you're hoping for it, you're going to give them a chance. But if they don't, then you can cut them loose with very little options. That other one is probably going to have to be somebody more ambitious, because you're not going to see somebody as good as the guys that I've mentioned take that sort of a contract with the Warriors, and they don't really have the wherewithal, unless Lacob and Goober are really willing to spend money, to throw a partial or a heavy partial guarantee at a guy who doesn't look that likely to make the roster. So I don't think they're going to pull Brian Roberts or somebody like that with anything less than some guaranteed money, especially since the opportunity at present is not that great, and that guy would probably be your third point guard. So if you wanted somebody for a backup spot, but I think Roberts in particular, those guys aren't good enough to be your backup guy. So I think that's kind of where the Warriors are with Livingston. Again, it really does depend on how much ownership is willing to spend for that spot. I think the peace of mind really does bring some value, and there is an incentive to doing that, especially considering the role that I'm advocating for McCaw to take in that. He really hasn't done much this year. I fully believe that he could, but he has not to this point. So that's always something to consider. You know, when you're a championship team, a championship level team, you think that's where you're going to be next year. Question marks are very uncomfortable, because question marks that don't get answered become real problems. We're seeing that with Cleveland this year. We've seen it in other years in the past. And as much as he turned into a very successful NBA player, one of the best examples of this with the Warriors is Kent Bazemore. Bazemore, years ago, the intention was that he would be the backup point guard. That absolutely didn't work. The Warriors were not a championship level team by any stretch of the imagination at that point, but it did really hurt. And giving McCaw the reins without knowing that that's what he can do, and they're not going to get that experience. They have more knowledge than I do because of practice and everything like that, but they're not going to get that maybe until Summer League, and by the time Summer League happens, Livingston's probably going to have decided. So they really have to work with the knowledge they have, and that could lead them down the road of making an agreement with Livingston that is reasonable, kind of expensive, but gives them a risk mitigation that they're comfortable with. And I think that makes sense for all sides. I've never talked to Livingston about his free agency to see what he thinks about it. Guys almost always give those kind of non-committal, oh, I'd love to be here, all that kind of stuff, but it's a business. Like, that's the kind of thing you're going to hear. And I have no problem with that. That's what they should do when we ask him those questions. So it'll be interesting to see. And the lack of a true replacement for him, especially considering the resources that the Warriors can offer, makes me lean towards that sort of an idea, unless somebody ridiculous is willing to take a huge pay cut to join the Warriors. And that's always possible. I'm not going to write that off at all, but it seems unlikely, especially considering that is not their priority compared to figuring out what they're going to do at center. And I think they're going to get something done with Iguodala, but just overall where they want to go. So it's an interesting process to consider. I'm not exactly sure also who the team would be that's going to make Livingston that offer to really make the Warriors sweat, especially if he wants to be on a competitive squad, because the best of the best this year just don't have that much cap space to work with, and the teams that are good and do have a little bit of cap space to work with, like, could think about Milwaukee for this. Milwaukee doesn't really need Livingston. They already have Malcolm Brogdon. They already have Matthew Dellavedova. They don't really have that sort of a pressing need to throw it on unless they're going to go really good. And Nate Duncan and I actually talked on Dunked On about the idea of Eric Bledsoe going there via trade. And so, yeah, they could do something like that. But Livingston's a very different type of player. And then in the West, he would be valuable on Utah, but they have two intriguing young point guards in Hauleneto and Dante Exum, who I expect to be the backup there. And I don't think they would see Livingston as the starter, considering how lofty their expectations are. And, you know, most of the other teams have things pretty close to figured out, or in the case of Memphis, let's say, another team that Livingston, I believe he had a contract there because he's basically played on almost every team in that time when he was in the wilderness recovering. So I don't think there are a ton of like really great fits, rising kind of fits like that, unless a team loses their guy. The most promising example of this for Livingston's purposes would be New Orleans, where they lose their guy. They don't have enough money to replace that player with somebody of those tiers that I talked about before. So then they're sitting there going, well, crap, we need to get somebody. And then they look at Livingston. So that might be a possibility, but I don't think that is a likely thing. And if the Warriors want to, they can play a little bit of hardball and wait it out. But I expect that if they have a number that they think is reasonable, I think that that could totally work out. So that is enough for that subject. Of course, be back for podcast on game three, the finals. I do not have a guest lined up yet. So many people are in Cleveland. I'm still at home in the Bay Area because Nate Duncan and I are doing the Twitter NBA show, which is going to be awesome. So we are going to do the, you know, we're doing an NBA finals game. First one for the Twitter NBA show, second screen, live analysis. We treat it as kind of like an alternate commentary track for the game. You can listen to us if you prefer it to the ABC coverage, but if even if you prefer ABC, can't blame you. You can watch us during commercials and halftime because instead of showing ads, we answer your questions. So you can feel free to use that. Follow Nate Duncan on Periscope at Nate Duncan. Or it's Nate Duncan NBA is his handle. I don't know if it's an at because it's Periscope, so it all gets different. And I'll tweet it out and all that sort of stuff as well. The other thing I wanted to talk about briefly, didn't want to use a ton of this space, is that I posted a thing on Medium today, and I also tweeted out a couple times about getting feedback for what I want to do next year. I'm in the process, I'm not making any sort of announcement or anything like that, but I'm in the process of figuring out what I want to do. And a lot of that is information that is personal, you know, money, time, opportunity, things like that. But another part of it is what you all want, what you think I'm good at, what you think is worth your time, worth your attention, in some cases worth your money, worth other people's advertising dollars, those sorts of things. And so I put a thing up on Medium. You can check it out and kind of, it's short. It's like a 400 word layout of kind of where I'm thinking about it. I didn't put in any of my ideas because I didn't want to shade the results. I have some pretty cool stuff running through my brain. As those of you who have listened to me long enough know, there's always a lot of stuff running around in there. So you can check it out. And just like any other thing with feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, at Danny LaRue on Twitter. As always, I promise to read everything. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it, but I do not promise to respond. I've already gotten a lot of responses with it, so I can't promise that for everybody, but I will read it, and it is important to me, and I want to, you know, create the best possible product, and within the understanding of how much other great Warriors content exists. And I am open about that. I am thrilled that this team gets covered. I think that's great for the fans, but you know, it makes it harder to find my own niche. So we'll work through it all from there, but that's why your input can be useful, because it is a piece of the equation that I can estimate, but it's always better to have real data than to just think about it myself. So you can do it that way. If you want to support the show, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, download every episode. Those are always big things you can do to help. You can also check out our sponsors, and that's all for now. Talk to you after game three. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.